Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 130. You're here with Dave. It's a solo show, and I'm going to rove deep, and I'm going to rove long. Basically, there's just a ton going on at the moment. We're doing Moon Knight, the Charlie Hudson run, or Houston run, I believe is how you pronounce his name, that he did with David Finch on art. So that's going to be the trade of the week. And, you know, I want to say a big hello and thank you to Stu, who's out there. I had a coffee with him earlier this week. Obviously, my valuable co-host of the Signal, still trapped in jury duty for potentially about another month or so, maybe more, you know, but at least that long. So there's that. So Stu will be coming back. Don't worry. We're going to have more guest hosts. But I thought tonight would be a good time for me to do a solo show, get close to the fans again, or the fans, the listeners again, and just kind of like, maybe we start to look a little bit internal. Maybe we start acting in a Hall of Mirrors style. Dave looking in an endless, like, clown house of mirrors. What truths will we uncover? What deceits will be laid bare? It's hard to say. Now, first up top of the show, Florida Man, Mike Baron's new book's out. Support it. It's available on Amazon, paperback, Kindle. It's hilarious. Mike Baron is absolute best. And also, Chuck Dixon's new Levon Cade novel, Levon's Time, is out. A series that is just pure vigilante action. If you enjoyed Chuck's Punisher, you've got to pick up the Levon Cade series. Both Mike and Chuck have got new publishers, and they're really going great guns. It's fantastic, actually. Now, and also this show, big thank you to Ray from Into the Night, Last Sons of Krypton, who's helped me out on the news, because I was super busy at work this week, and it was kind of a slow news week at times, and, you know, you're left scouring the news, like Lois, just working hard, working extra long, trying to get there to some sort of a, you know, universal truth. But Ray came in and helped out with the news today, and that was a big assistance to me, because Lois is doing the beat, and, like, the contacts aren't calling back. You know, the sources have run dry. She's looking for that scandal. She's looking for, you know, crisis in Kremlin. And it wasn't arriving. Ray, last minute, comes in with the news. Fantastic. Thank you, Ray. Now, we'll kick off with The Joker. Got us 8-minute standing ovation at the Venice Film Festival premiere. I'm incredibly pumped for this movie, and it's getting a lot of casual heat from a lot of people who aren't necessarily big superhero fans. They're just going, this looks amazing. I'm 100% down. I saw there was some internet heat, like blowback regarding, incels, something I didn't even know existed. Basically saying that because it's depicting Joker potentially sympathetically, that it's kind of validating incels, fucking intense misogyny. And my response was like a shrug, because frankly, Joker is, I'm sure, not the hero, like a heroic figure. I think there's a certain level of, you know, sympathy, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be a monster. And what do you want? Like a really likable Joker? That doesn't work either. Like, it's Joker. He's about as evil as it fucking gets. As Dion said on the show, he's not really that funny. It's a comedy of death. Like, he's in love with it kind of thing. But it's not really. And when I think of Joker, I don't think of, like, hilarious gags he's ever done. At most, it's kind of like cheap physical puns most of the time from him. But anyway, look, as always, well, I'll watch the product and then we'll give the review. And it's coming out soon. And I am actually excited. I thought that last trailer was very good. DC Comics are about to give us potentially a Black Batman in 2020. I think this was coming from the comic book side of the equation. I mean, I'm pretty sure that Batman Year 1000 was a Black Batman. In fact, I'm 100% sure it was with Paul Pope. I really enjoyed that. God, please don't let it be Duke Thomas. What a shit character. I mean, honestly, just a painful character. A leftover from the Scott Snyder run where he was terrible. Signal. I mean, it pains me that he's called Signal, considering we're Signal of Doom, because one of the lamest characters in the Bat family, if not the lamest, actually, because I'd put Ace the Bat Hound well above fucking Duke Thomas, who's lame. So a Black Batman, maybe a new character, maybe Jefferson Pierce, Buck Lightning stepping in, maybe someone else, some other guy. Who knows? But, I mean, I'm down for the experience. And, frankly, I can't wait till Tom King gets off the title. It's been overly long, overly hyped. I'll say right now, he's a trophy hunter. He doesn't go 5 seconds without mentioning he's in the CIA. And it's boring, frankly. The stories are boring. The reliance on PTSD is boring. The constant reminding everyone you're in the CIA, you know, is boring. The whole thing is just boring now. And I can't wait till he's got the Batman title, you know. And I'll be honest, I'm sounding harsher than I actually feel about it, because I just feel he's been aggressively mediocre through much of the run, especially since 50. But, I mean, he's turned people off Batman. Like, doesn't that say something? Like, and it's not good what it's saying? Like, this is Batman. And I'm seriously sitting here. Like, Batman's easily one of my favorite characters. Easily. And I'm sitting here going, I don't want to read Batman because Tom King's boring me to tears with it. And it's kind of extended. It's kind of reverberated in my soul. I'm not reading other Batman as well, and I'm not reading detective comics, all because I just feel like it's just been a complete fuck-up for fucking months now, if not years. And meanwhile, probably some good work getting ignored on detective comics. It's frustrating to me that Tom King's, like, mediocre and overly praised Batman is kind of poisoning the well a little bit for me, and I can't wait till he's off it. I'd almost take anybody at this point. Like, Jesus Christ, I can't be the only one out there saying it, you know? I don't sit around on the internet on Twitter, like, doing too much fucking around. There's a bit of Twitter heat and stuff from me, but there's not a lot. You know, but, like, I put on a word balloon the other day. Within 2 minutes, he mentioned the CIA. Like, honestly, like, we heard the first 1,000 times you said it. And, yeah, and he was talking about PTSD. Like, it's like, Jesus Christ, I feel like I'm getting PTSD from the fucking stories. Anyway, I mean, there's going to be a Black Batman, and I'm all for it. Like, God, like, I'm hardly averse to change. I'm just averse to really boring comics. This is interesting. A new rumor indicates Marvel Studios is developing a Hulk vs. Wolverine film for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This rumor comes from Mikey Sutton on Facebook. Mikey Sutton on Facebook. I mean, let's hope Mikey Sutton on Facebook got some actual fucking cred. Jesus Christ. And then the article gets even worse. And then it says, according to TVO of Lords of the Long Box, the film will be based on the Immortal Hulk comic, which is the current iteration of the Hulk in Marvel Comics. Now, we all know that Immortal Hulk, Al Ewing, I believe, is the writer there, was outselling Batman, which is hilarious to me. And I've only heard good things about Immortal Hulk. Is there fights with Wolverine in it? Because otherwise it doesn't make any fucking sense that this would be based on Immortal Hulk if it's Wolverine versus Hulk. I mean, honestly, am I the only one out there who's got a brain? Like, seriously, like, they fought in their very first appearance. So maybe it's, like, Wolverine, like, 181 or whatever. Like, not Wolverine, Hulk, 181. And then was it 182 where they fought, and 181 he comes out from behind the bush, whatever he did, in the classic sort of cat-meow costume. You know, and I know Adam the Computer's out there kind of noting his scorecard. Shout out, Adam. You've been stellar in recent times, and you're on the show, and it was an absolute privilege and honour to have him on. I feel like I've kind of buried the lead. A Hulk versus Wolverine movie? Hell yeah. And what a good way to bring Wolverine in as a solo character. You know, and then you can also have Hulk, who's a very strong part of the Marvel Universe. I mean, I'm 1,000% down for this idea. I hope, now that I heard this rumor, I'm like, my God, I hope it's true. I think a lot of people are like that. They hear this and they're like, Jesus Christ, I hope that fucking happens. You know, like, like, some people kind of like, I can just imagine they're driving home in their cars. This news comes across the radio. A casual fan goes, wow, a Hulk vs. Wolverine movie? Sounds pretty cool. Yeah. Let's hope it's not too good to be true, as they say. We had news on Black Widow. A new report reveals the next MCU film, which is Black Widow, will take place within a two-year window between 2016's Captain America Civil War and last year's Avengers Infinity War, as Natasha confronts unresolved issues from her past. The upcoming film will have Natasha encounter other operatives from the Russian clandestine organization she left years ago. This includes Yelena Bevlova, and the Red Guardian, Russia's answer to Captain America, who has a history with Romanov. And I believe the Red Guardian is being played by David Arbour, who was the sheriff in Stranger Things and was Hellboy in the very disappointing recent Hellboy movie. I'm really quite looking forward to a Black Widow movie. It's been too long. Scarlett Johansson's in fine form. I believe she's got a producer credit on this movie. I think she feels close to the character. I think she's been excellent as the character. And, I highly look forward to it. I think they could do something really kind of cool. I think Black Widow is one of the coolest characters in the MCU who hasn't quite been given enough chance to shine. She shines in brief interludes, but it'd be lovely to have a full movie of her. Now, some big news. I believe John Travolta is coming to Supernova Perth and Brisbane, I believe. Now, to me, this is a pretty big get. Australian comic cons out here and pop culture cons are pretty fucking lame compared to, like, the ones in the States. Like, and I've been to ones in the States and I've been to ones here. If they get the right guests, it can still be a very entertaining day, and there is some really good cosplay. So that is one element where the Aussies do try hard, actually, with their cosplay, but the guest list support, like Ray and I are going to Oz Comic Con this year, and the guest list is just so bad. Like, it's just so bad. I know Archie from fucking Riverdale's there, and I do like Archie and Riverdale, but that's it. Like, we stop and we start on that fucking announcement. There's nothing else of interest, really, honestly. Like, some Australian comic book creators are always, which is cool. You know, Holder Scott's, you Tom Taylor's, I'm big fans of their work, but in terms of, like, mainstream stars, they're struggling. And I get it, it's tyranny of distance and the costs and everything like that, but regardless, John Travolta, a major fucking player. I mean, his career might be cooling down, but it's still John Travolta. I mean, I'd listen to this guy talk for hours. I think he's, like, one of the fucking world's greatest. Like, Pulp Fiction, Vincent Vega, Saturday Night Fever. You know what I mean? What's that show? Welcome Back, Cotter. Look Who's Talking. Get Shorty, one of my personal favourites. I mean, yeah, John Travolta, major player. And I've generally always been very interested in anything he does. And, like, I'd love a chance to listen to him. And a shout-out to James and Becky, who I believe are in Queensland. Guys, reach out to me. Are you going to go and see John Travolta in Supernova? I believe he's in Brisbane. And I am very, very excited by this news. Now, then we had a Bad Boys 3 trailer, Bad Boys for Life. Look, I'll say right now, I am a huge Bad Boys fan. I love those first two movies, especially the first one. I thought the first Bad Boys was excellent. It caught me just the right time. I was early 20s. And it hit big. It hit real big. I was probably 19 or 20, actually. And I dug it. Bad Boys 2 was also good. Now, it's been a long time since. It's been 20 years since, I think, Bad Boys 2. I think Bad Boys 2 was, like, maybe 99 or something. So, yeah, 20 years. And, I'm going to go see it in cinemas. I'll say that right now. I'm going to go see it in cinemas. I'll be interested to see what the box office take is like, only because I'm interested to see if this is going to be... The advantage this has over Independence Day is Will Smith is still Will Smith, okay? And he's still a very, very powerful performer. And I think with Martin Lawrence, that was the best part of the trailer. They've still got that chemistry. It's very evident. The action looked a little generic, but they've still got a lot of chemistry, and that's what's going to sell this movie. I'm very excited. We had a new Titans 2. Titans, the DC Universe show. As listeners to this show know, I really enjoyed it. I watched the whole season. I found Titans extremely enjoyable. The new season 2 poster highlights Hawk and Dove, two of my favorite characters from the show. I went into this show with extremely, like low expectations. And at first I was like, okay, Robin's really violent. But then gradually I got into the swing of the show. I thought it was very good. And I thought it had a sheen of quality about it. It made some interesting choices, but overall I thought it was a very enjoyable first season. I'm certainly excited to see what they do with it. I'm not sure when it is. Actually, you know what? This is my new thing now. We're doing this on the Seedle now. We're actually going to research stuff on air. Okay, so Titans Season 2 release date. This is the way it's happening now. Like, it's on Netflix, don't forget, as well. Okay, wow. That seems soon. September 6th. What is it now? It's September 6th. Oh, okay. Well, that's quite a timely news article then. Literally today, Titan Season 2 premieres. Well, that's pretty interesting. That was unexpected. I thought it was going to be sometime next year. So by next show, I will have watched at least a couple of episodes. I'm, as I said, a big fan of Titan. So that was a huge advantage. This just goes to show that live research during a show can pump it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're sitting there one second and it's like, oh, I think it's going to be something to 2020. You know, it's all in the future. Like, isn't the future more exciting than the present? Then we check and it's today. The future is now. Fantastic. A Variety article quotes this head of Sony on the Marvel Spidey split. He says, for the moment, the door is closed. M6P, friends of the show, were reporting that they were hearing that Sony and Marvel were heading back to the negotiation table, and that Sony would be willing to give up more equity of the financial pie if Marvel agreed to have Spider-Man appear in Venom 2 and possibly other movies like Morbius and Kraven. But anyway, it feels like Sony really know that to pump the Spider-Verse, you need Spider-Man, and you do. Like, if you're going to have a Morbius movie and Venom 2 and Kraven, you need Spider-Man to make it work. And I'm kind of, sort of, part of me thinks that Disney must realize that as well. Like, you sort of wish that everyone could win, and that you could have Spidey doing his Spidey things in these Spider-Verse movies, and yet I can understand Sony's position here, frankly. They've got a lot of money at stake if they can get this stuff to work, and you can't take Spider-Man out of the Spider-Verse. Spider-Man has a huge rogues gallery, but his relationship to the rogues and to the allies, your Silver Sables, your Kravens, etc., your Morbiuses, so many characters, you need him in there to bounce it off because he is the heart and soul of that Spider-Verse, obviously. And there's more than just Peter Parker. There's a whole stack of newer characters that have been included in, like, the last 10 or 20 years. It's a powerful property. I understand Sony's play here. Venom made a lot of money. It was an okay movie. I found it enjoyable. But there's nothing to say that Spider-Verse was their own movie, and it was fantastic. So, we're doing another live thing on the show here. The Rambo's last trailer came out, this last Blood trailer. It looks fantastic. Now I am going to, let's work out when this debuts. I believe it's like September 20, I want to say. And I'm so fascinated to see basically how good this is and how much sort of it takes at the box office and how it sort of resonates or not with audiences, because I really think that this could be something special. Like, I want to watch basically Rambo 1 and 2 and September 20. Okay, there we go. I was correct. So I want to watch Rambo First Blood and Rambo 2, where he goes to Vietnam, and probably the last one that he did as well, which I quite enjoyed. and then see how we go. Because I thought the last one was a really entertaining, like, violent movie, and it just feels like this could even take it up a notch from there. And let me tell you, go and watch the trailer. I guarantee you that it's going to send a charge through you. There's something about these Rambo movies that, like, Sly just taps into, especially First Blood and Rambo, First Blood Part 2. Good movies, really good movies, really resonated with audiences. And I think, you know, sort of First Blood is a very dark premise. It dealt with, like, complicated issues, but made a really entertaining movie. Like, basically a Vietnam vet who's treated like shit by the town sheriff, and then he goes into the woods and he starts going kind of rogue and kind of pulling out his Vietnam War stuff. Like, it's pretty full-on interesting, to be honest. Yeah. Now, I want to do an RIP here. RIP to Terrence Dix, the Doctor Who script editor and writer, an amazing talent. I believe he worked on with John Pertwee and the second Doctor, Patrick Thurston, but he also did a massive amount of novelizations of stories, like a huge amount of novelizations of stories. And as a young kind of kid growing up, I read so many of his novelizations before I saw the episode, and they were excellent. Excellent capturing what happened in the show, but and always provide a bit of extra detail. He was extremely gifted novelist, frankly, as well as a really good script editor. The guy, I think, is, like, when I think of Doctor Who writers, he's my first one I think of, frankly. I mean, it just can't be underestimated, the amount of people that he reached with novelizations that went into libraries and turned onto the show. Like, it was like an advertisement for the show. Like, I'd read the novelizations and they were gripping. And he wrote, like, it felt like 80% of them, for kind of thing. I'm sure other guys came on, you know, but like, the bulk of the period through the 70s and the 80s, he was the guy. He was the guy you knew. If Terrence Dix was doing the novelization, you were kind of like, okay, I'm going to settle down with a fucking cup of coffee or a tea or something and fucking chill out and relax and enjoy. Yeah, I sometimes when I do RIPs, it's hard because, like, you feel such a connection to what they brought to the table. And all I could say is what I said on Facebook, the debt is huge. The debt is huge. What he left, and I truly do mean this. This is a guy who I think enriched so many lives with what he did, and he was a very gifted individual. Frankly, he was 84, so he'd had a long innings, but he had a great innings, you know. So God bless. Now this is interesting. Okay, so we've got an announcement for next show, and I'm rapping my way through the news this week because that's what it's like sometimes when you do a solo show. Like, you're just kind of flying by the seat of your pants, like, what's going to come next? What's going to come down the pipe? Like, I've always got that one eye out for the fucking story, for the scandal. You know, like, I've always got, part of me's always, like, thinking it could happen at any time. You know, like, I'm asleep in bed, wake up, what's going on? That's kind of the way I'm living now. Like, you're just thinking, like, sometimes with the signal, you're like, it almost feels like it could happen at any moment. And, like, I'll say this, there was a, I'll get back to what I was going to say, the next news item, but, like, there was a killing up near where my parents were, and a very sad story, really, and this lady got killed, and she was found floating in the bay. And I had the next day off as a leave day, just by coincidence. And I was saying to Michelle, I would like to get up there and Sherlock Holmes it, if it's a whodunit. Like, and no offense, like, I understand there was a loss of life. I'm talking about bringing justice. And, like, part of me was just like, man, I want to get up there, I want to start interviewing, running down leads. Like, part of me was thinking, like, this is fucking real. Like, there's a whodunit, and you hear about people who get on the internet and are solving crimes and stuff. And a part of me was just like, man, you could do this. Anyway, like, the problem is, I think, like, you know, who knows how deep it runs? Really, honestly, like, who knows how deep it runs? Who knows how connected she was? Who's out there? You know, enemies. You could become a target. All that kind of stuff. And then you start to think, whoa, slow down. Maybe let the police handle this one. But then the other party is like, or I take it up on myself. You know, but where's that going to lead? We know where it led to her. It's very sad, flooding in the bay. Anyway, Just letting you know, some of this is the way the mind's rolling. Like, really, honestly, it does. I wake up and, you know, I was talking to the guys in the Demons, like Ghost Rider, and I was like, sometimes I feel like I could just ride like the rider. And they say to me, David's a curse. And I'm like, man, it doesn't feel like a curse. It feels like you could just ride. Anyway. The Russo brothers are developing Grimjack comics into an Amazon series, and they're also adapting Battle of the Planets. They said they would look to be producers on Grimjack and look to direct Battle of the Planets. Now, okay, let's take this in two parts. Okay, Grimjack. John Ostrander, Timothy Truman. I have read a little bit of it. Next show, we're doing the first Grimjack omnibus, and we're going to go real deep. I think as deep as I went with Alien Legion, which I still think was one of my favourite books that we've done on the show, Alien Legion. I thought that was such a good read. Grimjack, I know less about. It's basically like a kind of mercenary soldier character who kind of like works in this, not works, but like visits this bar that's like the nexus of multiple realities. And it's a really good like 80s creator-owned comic that came out through First Comics and later IDW. I'm really excited to read it. I've been meaning to read it for some time. I like John Ostrander in general. I want to do a deep dive. I'm starting to kind of get to that mode now where it's like when I do these solo books, I want to go deep into it. Like almost, you know, I'd love to get John Ostrander on the show and probably, you know, ask him a few questions about it. So I want to go deep on it. I want to give the material the sort of like time to breathe that it deserves, as opposed to you just read two issues and then just slam out a kind of review. Sometimes I like to go, like with Alien Legion, I felt like I went deep into it. Like I felt like I was really connecting with the story. And that's just a really kind of like special feeling. DeMatteis was talking about the strengths of comic books and how they're kind of like a hologram that goes through the mind. And I understood what he was saying, like kind of a unique experience. Because the visuals applied, and there's also a story, and even though it's in, you know, fixed on the page, in your mind it flows through like a moving hologram. And the gifted, you know, and very competent writers and artists, artistic teams, it can really sing. And I'm really excited to experience Grimjack, because what little I have read, I've really enjoyed. I was like, shit, this is pretty good. And I want to do it on the Signal, so it could be a solo episode, but I'm going to be looking to do a lot of it, frankly. I think it deserves it. So good news is the Russo brothers have got the rights and are developing this, so who knows if we'll see light of day. The second part of the story, I mean, when I was a little kid, this is so funny, everything's nostalgic. Battle of the Planets was on, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I watched it many years later, and I was like, wow, this sucks. But, like, it actually doesn't suck. It was just that, like, the, you know, graphics and stuff back in those days, like the animation and everything, you know. And it was also, I think, a butchered kind of edit of a Japanese program or something. Like, I don't know a lot about it, but I know that there's an original program which I think they bastardized and stole, but cut bits from to develop their own storyline or something. So something like that anyway. I don't know what actually the storyline is, but, like, what I do know is as a kid, like, I'm talking, like, you know, 6 to 8, I thought Battle of the Planets was the coolest thing ever. And I think you could do a really good modern day retelling with some really cool graphics and special effects, and it had the basis of a really cool idea. It just struggles with modern eyes from that early 80s animation style. But it was really cool. I still remember Jason. He was kind of the dark one, you know, and I always liked him. And there was Mark, who was the fly right kind of guy, and there was Princess. I was actually pretty cool, and there was the other guy as well who spoke in bizarre. There was one guy who spoke really weirdly, who kind of for me had too much play in the show. Frankly, I kind of like Jason was my favorite. I think he had a motorbike or something. They had cool accessories and stuff like that. Like, it was really a kind of commercial, but I enjoyed it. Christian Stewart was told she she could land a Marvel role if she hid her sexuality. This wasn't quite the scandal that I thought it was. This was apparently like her people or someone's people saying to her she could land a Marvel role if she hid her sexuality in public, because she's I don't even know how to describe her, but she dates men and women, basically, according to what I read. And they thought that was kind of hurting her commercial appeal. I think she's a gifted actress, frankly, and I don't get that. I mean, I don't know. I can't say. Is Tessa Thompson bisexual? I don't know. Maybe she's not. And I've half read that somewhere. I don't care, like, at all. Like, I do think that it's bad, like, today, if that's really holding her back. And I'm glad that she's not. She apparently is saying, I'll date who I want. Well, good. God bless her. Like, I'm not going to get political on this show, but, I mean, I write a character who's bisexual in Des Moines. And I'm very supportive of the cause, frankly. And I have no time for homophobia of any kind, basically. I'll say on the signal right now, it's one of the very few, you know, political statements you'll ever hear me make. And, you know, that's just my opinion. And I've actually always liked her as an actress. I think she's got a certain style that works. I mean, those Twilight movies were terrible, but she was not terrible in them. That was just not my kind of thing. But what other stuff I've seen her in, like, was it American, what was it called? American Ultra. She was good in that. I've seen her in other things too, Adventureland. Yeah, she's definitely got acting chops. There's no doubt about that as far as I'm concerned. I'd love to see her in a Marvel role in, like, a big, or any kind of, like, big, you know, tentpole franchise. Like, for example, Robert Pattinson, who I also thought wasn't terrible. Terrible movies, but they weren't terrible in them, basically. I think I'm more and more starting to think that his Batman casting might be a pretty good idea. Moving on from there, this is something that really annoyed me. Diamond has cancelled the Conan comics Samira and Queen of the Black Coast over legal threats. We reported on this earlier. Basically, a French publisher, I believe it was, is in Europe, the rights to Conan are public domain. Whereas in the States, I believe they're controlled by Conan Properties, who license them to Marvel. Well, we know that for a fact. So Marvel licensed Conan since the rights lapsed with Dark Horse. So anyway, basically, they were sent a cease and desist letter. The publishers, the American publisher was going to be picking them up. I think it was a Blaze Comics, and they were going to publish these kind of more uncensored and translate them. More uncensored, violent Conan stories, and then they got a cease and desist letter, and Diamond's decided that they're not going to distribute them, basically, because there's a legal question mark over the whole enterprise. So it would take a good copyright lawyer who's familiar with the facts, I think, to really explain it so that we could kind of get their view on it. I'd actually be interested in reaching out to someone and maybe even paying them to get an opinion that we could broadcast on the signal. I wouldn't be adverse to that. I'd be interested to see what kind of, like, you know, rates they were charged for that. That would be something I'd find interesting to kind of, I don't know, like, you know, I'd just be interested in getting, like, a legal opinion on where this is. Because what this basically was just Diamond saying this is just too hard, which you can kind of understand from their perspective. They don't want to open themselves up to litigation. But I do find it fascinating, like, because we all know Marvel as well and Disney and all that. They're terrified of their characters becoming public domain. So I'm sure they do all sorts of legal fucking maneuvers behind the scenes to make sure that, like, you know, I can't just start writing, you know, Mickey Mouse comics and charging for an earning kind of thing. Like, can you imagine the sort of phalanx of lawyers that Marvel and Disney have at their disposal? Marvel would themselves, you know, who are licensing Conan, would, you know, be very, you would think, quite aggressive about protecting that trademark in the States, considering the huge push they've got in Conan at the moment. And can I frankly say, I think that, like, so far it's promising. I'm impressed by the way Marvel are pushing Conan, and, I mean, putting the archive books out in the big omnibuses, which I'm certainly fucking buying. And if I'm buying them, I'm telling you, there's a lot of hardcore Conan fans out there who are supporting these books. So let's watch your space. I am disappointed because I would have bought these translated. I'm interested in reading the sort of French-Italian versions of the character where I feel they're going to be more uncensored and all that kind of stuff, but sadly it doesn't sound like it's going to happen. Tom Taylor, writer Tom Taylor, Aussie, teases he'll be taking over Suicide Squad. Fantastic. Like, as far as I'm concerned, he's one of the best writers working at Marvel right now. I'd put him under Jason Aaron, frankly. He's my number two. Everything Tom Taylor does, I've happened to have read quite a bit of it, just by chance, really. And then the name stuck in my head because I associate him with quality. And again and again, he doesn't disappoint. Again, on this week's show, we do a Tom Taylor weekly comic, which is very entertaining. He's just a good comic book writer, basically, which is something that at times is lacking at the big two, sadly enough. Then we shout out to Ray. Ray did some interesting news. Marvel Comics have released another incoming teaser, this time foreshadowing a murder, perhaps of a superhero. The teaser, uncredited, appears to be drawn by Tony Stark Iron Man series artist Valero Shayetti? I don't know. Anyway, it's a picture I'm looking at now of Thing. Well, Thing, Reed, Sue Storm. God, Iron Man, someone, I don't know who. Yeah, there's two characters I don't know. Is it Valkyrie? I mean, does Valkyrie actually... I mean, I know nothing about Valkyrie in the comics, but does she have wings? Because there's a winged character and kind of like what looks like a sort of Valkyrie kind of helmet. Maybe that's Valkyrie. And then there's other people like... There's a blonde, might actually be Captain Marvel. And there's another blonde who probably is Johnny Storm. So I could have just said the Fantastic Four, which I almost said that I only saw three of them, but now I see a bit of a head, which makes me think that that's Johnny. And I think that is Captain Marvel. And I would be fascinated if someone could reach out and tell me who this is. Is that Valkyrie with kind of like angel-like wings, female with kind of a sort of winged helmet as well? Anyway, we're going to a lot of fucking detail here on this picture. Teasing it. Like, don't you love the way Marvel just rips ideas out of DC sometimes? Like, we had Heroes in Crisis, which was a whodunit, and now we've got another one. And, you know, I'm such a fucking sucker. I'm interested already, so anyway, there we go. I hate myself sometimes with how easily hooked in by cheap marketing ploys like this I am. You know, anyway, it is what it is. We've got more news here on Year of the Villain. I mean, I can't even bother reading it, like, honestly. Like, Year of the Villain sucks. It's Joker Year of the Villain. So, okay, slightly interesting. But as a fucking comic or event, and I hesitate to use the word event, it's just sucked. Just like Lex as a... I was thinking this the other night. Because I review Harley Quinn for the Batman universe, and it was a Year of the Villain crossover. And just how lame it is, like, the event, like, a ghost, like, hologram projection of fucking Lex, the Apex Lex, turns up. And I hate the way he looks. And, I mean, why do they have to ruin Lex Luthor? And Lex actually says to them, it's Year of the Villain, which is the part that really galls on me. That he feels the need to name the event, and you almost see trademark when he says it. It's Year of the Villain. You know, I promise to give you all these powers if you just, you know, submit, just say you'll join up or some shit like that. Like, it's just so lackluster is the word. It just feels like someone thought of it, had about, like, 2 minutes and thought of it and was like, yeah, let's just run with that. And just, it's the way he says it's Year of the Villain that annoys me the most. It reminds me a little bit, I think I saw someone on Dixonverse message board say, at least in concept, Underworld Unleashed, which had, I forget who, what his name was, is it Nero the Demon, promising all these powers if they sold their soul. You know, it's a similar concept. Underworld Unleashed was a cheesy event back in the 90s. I happened to be reading a couple of DC titles at the time, so I do recall it. It wasn't fantastic. But, yeah, look, it is what it is. Like, oh, I think Year of the Villain's extremely missable. And I think Event Leviathan is just so missable. Like, two lackluster events and annoyingly running at the same time as well. That's the other part that annoys me. They're running at the same time and you just think, why? Why are we running two events at the same time? that you don't feel like either one is particularly good or particularly well explained. Like, Event Leviathan as a comic to read was a snore. It was a fucking snore. At least Year of the Villain, there's a clear premise. Event Leviathan, I have no idea what's going on. And I read 3 issues of the main fucking book, and everyone's like, oh, you've got to read 1,000 Superman issues to understand it. Yeah, you know what? No thanks. No thanks. Like, I don't want to read, like, you know, 5 Superman titles to understand Leviathan. Because I read the Event Leviathan comic, and it made almost no sense. It was almost like, it was almost unreadable, frankly. Yeah. It really was. It was just boring, is what it was. Like, Batman and Lois talking to some other people and just talk till their fucking ears fall off. And Dave's just reading it going, what am I reading? Like, when did comics become this dull? Okay. Then we had more news on Robert Pattinson, interview with Variety. He broached the topic of Batman with Christopher Nolan, who he worked recently on with on a film. I was talking about things to do with the Batsuit, how to get more movements in it. So, I mean, talking to Christopher Nolan, who obviously did the trilogy, obviously a big, big, big part of Batman's, you know, resurgence in the movies. Interesting that Robin Pattinson was peeing his brain, because, like, Christopher Nolan, a true, you know, artistic sort of, like, genius, really, and getting to pick his brain would be, I think, quite a fertile grounding place. And this is when I started to think Robin Pattinson might actually have some genuine heat here on this role. Now, I'm starting to warm up to it, to be honest. And I'm no card-carrying member of his fan club. I was reasonably ambivalent towards him his whole career. But I'm starting to think this guy might have something. Apparently, he's a big, big Batman fan and wanted the role and, like, you know, was chasing it. Like, good for him. I'd be chasing it fucking too if I was a hot actor. Like, you know, not just hot physically, but hot to, you know, commercially. Yeah, I mean, what a peach of a role to get, Batman. I mean, to think that you could do a trilogy and, you know, look at Christian Bale, he was so good. Yeah. I mean, what's left to say other than roll on the fucking Matt Reeves movie? I'm glad it's finally picking up speed. It's been about 2 years. Then we had some, oh, God, like, Ray. Thank you, Ray, for doing the news, but, like, he's a huge news dump on the Eternals. Like, oh, my Lord. Like, I am so unexcited for the Eternals movie. I am just so unexcited in general by their sheer presence as an IP. Like, I couldn't give a fuck about the Eternals. But because Ray put it in, I'm going to read it out, because maybe someone out there is a big Eternals fan. Are you out there? I believe there's probably about 5 of them in existence. One of them is probably Jack Kirby, who's sadly passed away. Marvel's next big team in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is unquestionably the Eternals. And while newcomers to the comics, I'm not a newcomer, might not be super aware of the group, I'm not a newcomer, and I did not know shit about them. Marvel will be launching 2 books this December that will get you up to speed. The first is a reprint of the classic Jack Kirby written and drawn Eternals 1, which featured the group's first appearance and many of the concepts that fans will see in the upcoming film. So just a one-shot? Okay. So just one issue, though. Like, I mean, honestly, like, how... like, everything you need to know about the Eternals in one fucking issue. Jesus. The second book is Eternals, Secrets from the Marvel Universe, which will collect material from the untold tales of the Marvel Universe that originated in the What If issues 23 through 30. These stories feature the secret origins of the Eternals, as well as their connection to Thanos and the Inhumans. The Inhumans also suck. Can I just say that? Like, if you ever, like, I hate to be this guy, but I feel like I'm not going to be a shill. I'm not going to just sit here and... It's something I noticed on Collider after Jimmy Terz has pointed out to me. Like, no matter what, they're determined just to hype it. Like, I fucking hate it. Like, it really started to grind my gears. Like, Inhumans suck, basically. The show sucked. Their modern-day appearances suck. Maybe their classic stuff in the Fantastic Four and all that doesn't suck. I'll give you that. I'll give you some of the classic stuff is okay. But when they tried to turn them into the X-Men because Fox owned the X-Men, that sucked really hard. And, like, almost no one liked it. And yet you'd find some podcasters and some shows on the internet, like, trying to sort of make out like it was this great big fucking thing. And I was reading the comics, and they were painful. And, yeah, I guess that's just part of the Marvel universe that I just don't care about. Like, I hate to sound so negative. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I'll try to be less negative, but Eternals, thumbs fucking down. And you've got an all-star cast, Angelina Jolie. Like, every day I look, there's a new cast member announced, and it's all to make it appear like it's going to be so fantastic. And yes, Guardians, like classic Guardians, blows in the comics. But in the movie, it was fantastic. So yes, you can do it well. And I hope they do it well. Like, so I am hopeful. But this whole thing about, like, you know, pick up the books from What If 23, like, does anyone care? Like, I've read Marvel Comics for a long time, and Eternals have been massively absent. You know, Watcher is a cool character. Watcher, you could do something cool with, and I'm sure they will do with the What If, you know, TV show. Like, Watcher is a cool character. But do I need a whole movie about the origin of Watcher? No. I've seen the origin of the comics, and frankly, it's not that good. Like, the original Watcher who turns up and talks to the reader and stuff and was very big in the What Ifs is cool. But you don't need, I don't need, like, oh, it's a quick new with the Watcher movie. I'm like, oh, God. You know, like, why? Why, God? Like, when did it become like we need origins for everything? Like, I'd just like to add an appearance of Watcher. Maybe breaking the fourth wall, maybe in Deadpool or something, or in this What If series. Like, stuff like that. Like, incorporate it into the storyline already ongoing. I'm sure this Eternals movie can be okay. Like, surely. I mean, I'm not, like, they're just superpowered, like, gods or something. Like, Jesus. Like, it's not even that interesting. It's really not that interesting. Like, they're sort of like the new gods, but in the Marvel Universe, except unlike the new gods in DC, these guys didn't really take hold, basically. They're sort of like the failed new gods, and we're supposed to pretend like we cared, and no one cared for a very long time. Anyway, Robert Downey Jr. will reportedly reprise his Iron Man role for a new Disney Plus spin-off. It's believed Downey Jr. will return in a voiceover capacity, as his character will be an AI, similar to Paul Bettany's Jarvis, who will train Riri Williams to be a superhero. I didn't even know we were getting an Ironheart series. Have I reported on this before? Have I actually reported that we're getting an Ironheart series? Because I forget if we had. I'm not surprised, though. Like, Ironheart, they've pumped in the comics. One of these characters that, like, if you don't like, you know, oh, you're such a sexist, you don't like Ironheart. No, I'm not really a sexist, but no, I don't like her. I just think she sucks, basically. I think she's a very poor character with very little going for her. They're trying to capture the youth market. I understand that extremely cynically. That's what they're trying to do, and they try to dress it up. They try to dress it up as a diversity hire and as a step forward for PC culture. Sadly, she sucks. That's the bottom line. She sucks as a character. And, yeah, Robert Downey Jr. is returning to voice his. I'm surprised, like, they must be paying him handsomely to do this. I'm surprised he's doing this. But you know what? Money talks. So I'd probably do it too if they offered me to do the voiceover. I don't care. Like, Riri Williams. Okay, sure. Why not? Just another character. She's no better or worse than many a character. Don't make me think that I'm really singling her out. She's poor character, but, like, you could look at the whole Champions lineup that they had, and they were all poor characters, pretty much. It was pretty weak across the board. And that's been the story with comics for many, many years. Like, some legacy characters really connect, like your Wally Wests, your Tim Drakes, Damien. Some of them connect, and others it's like Iron Lad, Riri Williams, Iron Heart, Amadeus Cho. They're just poor. And that's not exclusive. Like, DC has its fair share of failures too. So, anyway, I won't be watching. Like people, this amazes me. This thing now where people are like, I'm going to watch it no matter what. Like, why? Why will you watch it no matter what? Like, why will you watch it if it sucks really hard? Like, just because it comes from a comic book? Like, why? Do you read all the comic books in the world? Like, or do you have some critical opinion? Is there some part of your brain that's able to judge whether something is, in your mind, good and worthy of your time? Or do you just read it all and watch it all? Fuck. What a way to live. Like, can you, like, really, what a way to live, to get up and do that. Like, how do you find time? But they're like, oh, I'm going to watch it all. I'm going to watch all the, like, to those who genuinely are digging it, cool. But to those who are just like, I don't like it, but I'm going to watch it, like, why? Why put yourself through it? Anyway, I mean, each to their own, I always say. Like, you know, I mean, it's a Friday night. There's been storming in Sydney. I've had a lot of coffee. I'm operating on an instinct. I'm charged. I'm burning. I'm looking for answers, and they're just not coming. Something cool. I looked today, and Ray also sent me these pictures, leaked photos of What If series. I found it really hard to discern from the photos what's going on, but I saw, like, basically some pretty cool stuff, like Black Panther, voiced by Chadwick Boseman in the jacket of Star-Lord. Another image shows T'Challa wearing Star-Lord's mask on what looks to be an alien planet. There's another image showing Captain America as a zombie, which some fans picked up upon by zooming into the high-resolution What If logo. You can bet that the What If TV show, the animated show, will feature a loose adaptation of the popular Marvel zombie series. Now, this is, I want to say this, because there's been a lot of sarcastic comments from me so far this show. I am 100% involved for the What If animated series, and I will watch it every episode. I am so excited. I love, in general, most Marvel animated stuff. I really have a soft spot for their animated division. I wish they would do more with it, and I'm glad that, like, Wolverine and the X-Men was one of my favorite animes of all time. Or animation, whatever you call it, series. Look at this one. The first confirmed episode of What If will explore an alternate timeline in which Peggy Carter is injected with the Super Soldier Serum to become Captain America. That's pretty cool. This is the source of most of the other leaked images, which also feature Bucky Barnes, played by Sebastian Stan, and two images of Steve Rogers, Chris Evans, who appears to take Bucky's place as Peggy's sidekick. Well, that's pretty interesting. I'm definitely down for the What If series. I think the What If series could be one of the best things that Disney Plus have got going to have on their service. And I believe that the service is coming soon. I think it's November. Shopping with Dave. Just three things this week. This was a quieter week. Batman Damned hardcover. Obviously, they've removed Bat Dick, so you won't get to see Bat Dick, which was not the entertaining event that you would hope for. It was in shadow. Like, I still can't believe it was a controversy. Like, honestly. Like, as controversies go, it just was one of the most stupid ones of all time. But anyway, Batman Damned, what I read of it was very entertaining. It was good 7.5 out of 10 Batman material. Like, Brian Azzarello knows what he's doing. I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, I had my qualms with it. But overall, I thought it was a pretty entertaining story, and I potentially might get that hardcover. So that's definitely one that's at least on the could-buy list. The Joker, His Greatest Jokes, trade paperback. This is similar to Hitman Greatest Hits. It's a collection of Joker stories. Now, there is a Joker 70th anniversary collection hardcover, which I bought for Dion, actually. And there's a Bronze Age collection of Joker that's going to be coming out or is out now very shortly. This is more of a sort of economical buy that you could pick up, just His Greatest Joke. So if you're a Joker fan out there who's a student or something, maybe you want to pick this up. Hitman, I was very interested in buying as well, although I do think that they should just reprint the Hitman trades from Volume 1. Joker's different. I am aware there have been Joker series, but most of the time he's appearing in new Batmans and stuff, and it's a collection, so I can understand more the perspective there. Then finally, Walking Dead, hardcover volume 16. I just picked up recently issues 6 to 15 of the hardcovers, so I've got all 15 of the hardcovers of Walking Dead. I'm going to make it a real investment in time to read this series. And I just thought that volume 16's out now, so that's another one to get. And I'm sure I'd love to hear from more Walking Dead fans, because I think it's a fantastic series and I'm just starting to really dive into it. I had read a little bit of it, and Michelle and I watched the show. We're fascinated by the show. So, yeah, it really is a good series, and volume 16's out. And, I mean, I imagine that plenty of readers out there are, you know, still getting something very special from that comic. I think it was really a landmark comic in a way that, you know, some create our own stuff just really hits, and that just hit out of the park, and it became a real institution. And just, I think it's really fucking cool that they've gone that deep on it. Weekly Comics. Now, this was an interesting week. I was solo, and when I'm doing a solo shows are by their very nature shorter than a regular show. And the main reason for that is, like, basically, the banter is in there. I'm talking to the listeners, but someone else isn't chiming in. So, a stew array, et cetera, et cetera. So, I tend to load up on Weekly Comics so that we have something on top of the news to read. Going to start out with Batman versus Ra's al Ghul, issue 1. 2 out of 10, guys. This was terrible. This was really bad. I actually am embarrassed by how bad this was. I feel dumber for reading it. It's for Neil Adams' completists only. It's an example of nonsensical. Just basically, it was the most random comic I've read in a long time. And it might actually be the worst Batman I've read. The art's fine. It's Neil Adams. Quite loose. I mean, it's Neil Adams. I loved his work for a lot of years on Batman and stuff. Like, his work with Denny O'Neill. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a hater on Neil Adams. Normally, I think he's a fucking, you know, great icon of the industry and everything. But this is really, it's bizarre. Like, it's got two identical-looking Robins. You're never sure what's going on. Like, it just made no sense. Like, there's terrorists roaming the streets. It's got this panel where it says, like, check out Batman Cataclysm and No Man's Land. So I'm like, is this set during Batman Cataclysm and No Man's Land? Like, I wouldn't have picked that if you hadn't just sort of thrown that in as an editorial note. It was one of the most nonsensical mainstream comics that I've read. I mean, I've read some indie stuff that's just terrible. But this just made no real sense. You had Professor Al running around. Batman just, like, not acting true to his character at all. It was an experience to read, actually. And I thought it was going to be really... I love Ra's al Ghul. And obviously, I love Batman. So I was like, Batman versus Ra's al Ghul. This sounds interesting. Like, I thought of Greg Rucka doing Death and the Maidens and something like that. I was like, oh, cool. Like, you know, like a new sort of modern take. But instead, we got like an old man, like trying to dial it back from the 60s. It was bizarre. I quite like Silver Age comics and stuff and Bronze Age and everything. And they sure had their corny moments. But this was more corny than. I don't know, I've read quite a bit of Bronze Age JLA, and this was like something else. I don't know what was going on. This was I gave it 2 out of 10, guys. I can't recommend it with an honest heart. I'm sorry. Maybe someone out there. If you're a Neil Adams completist who, you know, I don't imagine those people are out there who buys everything, buy it. Like, you know, it's cool expression. The guy's writing and drawing and, you know, it's his own thing. Like, that's cool. Like, you know, it's his vision. And if you're a completist of his work, yeah, grab it. Like, why not? But outside of that, I wouldn't be recommending it to anyone. Deceased, A Good Day to Die, one shot. Tom Taylor. Fantastic. And really good art. This is a continuation of the Deceased event. And I honestly thought this was one of the best stories I read in a while. I gave it 8 out of 10, extremely readable. I mean, it does stuff like Pocket Dimensions. It's the whole, basically the whole death of the DC Universe. And it had Orion and Big Barda. Not Orion. Big Barda and Mr. Miracle. Characters that I kind of quite like. I've never read the original New Gods stuff, but I've read a lot of the sort of stuff they've done in intervening years. And this was a really good depiction of them. It was quite touching. The art's excellent. Tom Taylor's delivering as usual. He's turning into the postman. He just keeps on delivering every time. 8 out of 10. This is one where I would say to you, I'm getting the Deceased event in hardcover, and I hope it collects this. Tom Taylor is definitely one of my favorite creators. Then we had Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, issue 1. Basically, this is very much like after the events of Heroes in Crisis, where Ivy died but came back as kind of more a plant-orientated creature. And obviously, Harley was exonerated of being the murderer, which was accused of being because it turned out to be Wally West in a very poor, poor, poor story. Entertaining. 7.5 out of 10. I like seeing Harley in a kind of suburban kind of, like, lifestyle. Like, she's quiet, and she says quiet is boring. It plays with the relationship between the two of them, which is kind of a friendship and a romance at the same time. Like, they've got an interesting dynamic. Ivy's not in full control of her powers. She's extremely powerful, but she's literally turning into a plant. It plays the comedy, but it doesn't play it too much. I thought this comic had some heart. I thought it was Jody Houser did a very good job. I gave it 7.5 out of 10. There's an interesting twist at the end. Overall, it's a good comic book. I mean, yeah, definitely. If you're a Harley fan, you should be picking this up. I actually lobbied to try to get this. I review the Batman Universe. I review Harley. And I didn't get this one, but I am getting the soon-to-be-coming-out Harleen, which I really wanted. So I'm really glad that I'll be doing this. But this was a good comic. And, I mean, if you like Gotham City Sirens, which I really a comic I really enjoyed, that kind of stuff, I think you'd probably enjoy it. Legion of Superheroes Millennium 1. Adam the Computer, I gave it 7.5 out. Adam the Computer kind of alerted me to it. 7.5 out of 10. I found it very good with great art at the start. I don't know if it was Jim Leon art, like that first few pages, because there was a lot of different artistic teams working on it, which I didn't particularly like. I thought this could have been done with a fuller treatment. Basically a character, I'm not familiar with her, Rose and Thorn. It seemed really interesting. Like, Rose is just like a normal woman, but she's got a multiple personality disorder, and Thorn is, I think, a super-powered vigilante slash criminal, or extremely violent, put it that way, and she gets into all sorts of trouble when she turns over, kind of like a Hulk situation. Whereas when it turns back to Rose, she's got no real memory of what's happened. She wakes up in prison, she wakes up wounded, etc., etc. This went through various periods. There was one where Supergirl was the president. Then it went to The Last Boy on Earth, Commandy. Batman Beyond before that. All sorts of different versions of the future. And she's immortal. She's not aging. And she's just living forever, and it's really pretty damn interesting. There's no Legion of Superheroes, and I know Adam the Computer was disappointed by that, and I can understand that. Like, so this is just sort of like a wander through the different time periods of the DC Universe leading up to the 31st century. That said, I enjoyed it. I thought some of the art was not the best. I really liked the art at the start, and I'm sure that must be Jim Lee. But if it's Jim Lee, it's Jim Lee doing a really good job. I thought it was a particularly interesting issue. And I'm on board for the Legion of Superheroes reboot, and I'm going to jump on board. And I've said this to Adam. I'm going to keep doing it. I mean, I read that huge Legion of Superheroes storyline recently, and I read it in the early 2000s, and it's quite addictive once you get going. There's a lot going on with the Legion. It's a pretty interesting comic when done well. And this is one of the stronger Bendis comics I've read. And the only part that I'll critique, which made me roll my eyes, is when Supergirl says, "So you're suffering from multiple personality disorder." And my apologies if suffering is not that. And I was like, oh, my God. We have to have the PC alert where Bendis is apologizing for using the word multiple personality disorder and suffering in the same sentence. Well, she's not thriving with it. So do we have to have it in there just so that we can tick a PC box? That was just like a very, very, very minor point, but it did make me roll my eyes because I get so tired of just this overly compliant, like, I don't want to offend. But in the whole basis of the storyline is that she's got multiple personality disorder. So it's not like you're not fucking making it front and center anyway. So do you have to then apologize? Like, you know, it's being politically correct for the sake of being politically correct, basically. And I find it almost offensive. I don't find it offensive, but I find it irritating. That said, that's a super minor gripe. I actually enjoyed the issue. I thought it was really good. It was one of my favorite Bendis stories that I've read in a long time. And it makes me feel that maybe his Legion stuff might be really good. I'm excited. Lois Lane 3. Look, Greg Rucka and Lois Lane, you know, great combination. I thought this was an effective comic. Not very thrilling, though. Can I be honest? Very solid. I liked the last panel reveal of Superboy. I liked the question, meeting the other question. And I'm still confused by the art a bit. I find the art a bit sometimes hard to work out what's going on and who's who. It doesn't help that, like, Lois and Renee Montoya look very similar if they weren't wearing different costumes. And I don't know, it's not really, we're three issues in and I'm not really, it's not pumping along. Like, and I like Greg Rucka a lot, a hell of a lot, frankly. And so I trust him, so I just go for the ride. So I'm giving it 7 out of 10, but I'm very aware that the way Greg Rucka writes, it could potentially just keep building and really those 7s have become 9s sort of thing. So if you like Lois Lane, and if you're a Greg Rucka fan, I think it's definitely pick-upable, but maybe this could read better in trade. And I don't mean that as a diss. I actually think it probably would. And that's not a problem. Like, I don't think every issue, you know, some stuff does read better in trade. And I think this is probably a good example. It's interesting, but at this point, the most interesting thing to me in this issue wasn't Lois Lane. It was the question, Renee Montoya meeting the other question, Charlie, I forget what his last name was. Why am I thinking his name was Victor? Was it Charlie Sage? That's the name going in my head. Let's look at this now. The question. Comics. The question. Comic. Was it Charlie? I want to say it was Charlie Sage. For some reason, I've got it in my head. Because the question that Renee Montoya, who has been the question, she was the question several years ago, so I assume she's been the question since then, since the New 52. She was definitely the question towards the end of the pre-New 52 universe, but I'm not 100% sure what happened since then. So, yeah, this is, like, as usual, I'm trying to find information out, and the fucking internet decides at this like exact point in time to start going like super slow. Okay, all right. Now, created by Steve Ditko, the question. All I want is a name. That's Charles Victor. Oh, okay. Charles Victor Zsasz, better known as Vic Sage. Oh, I thought, yeah, okay. All right, well, I was right. Well, that explains why she called him Charlie, because I was thinking, isn't his name Victor? He was known as Vic Sage, but his real name was Charlie. So he's come back from the dead, and then he goes, so many questions. Now, that part I really enjoyed. And you know what? My 7 can become a 7.5 easily. Like, I really like Greg Rucka's writing in general. I find the art in this not my favorite artistic style. It's a little fluid. It's not quite defined enough for my personal liking. But that said, it's still Greg Rucka writing Lois, and I find it very interesting. I think you'll probably explore Lois a bit more. It feels like Renee Montoya is getting a fair bit of play here, who I also love. So, I mean, you know, far be it for me to say not enough Renee Montoya, or too much Renee Montoya, because I'm a huge Renee Montoya supporter. And in fact, when I went to his table of Greg Rucka's table, I actually asked him about Renee Montoya and would he get to write her again? And what would he do and stuff like that? And he didn't turn around to me and say, I'm going to write her in Lois Lane in like 5 years' time in the future. He didn't have that crystal ball with him, but it is interesting. It's pretty good stuff. And I'm sure when this gets collected, wouldn't it be good if like Greg Rucka did a really long Lois Lane run, like, you know, 50 issues? That would be really interesting, I reckon. Like, I hope they can actually make that happen, because I think that would actually be really good. And that's something I miss in modern comic books, that titles like that, that aren't, like, Lois Lane's a big character, but she's not Superman or Batman in terms of sales, I would assume, but she's a good character. Like, so I'd call her B tier, you know, just, she's not Green Lantern, she's not Superman, she's, you know, I wonder if she outsells Wonder Woman. Maybe she does. But anyway, my point is, a character like that, I would love to see Greg Rucka take on like a long run, like a 50, not maybe 100, but maybe 50 issues, because I think he could take it some really interesting places. We're at issue 3, and suddenly I'm like, hold on, we're only at issue 3, Dave. Don't get too carried away. Maybe Greg's got like a long-term vision for the character, and you can do so much with Lois Lane. Like, she's a reporter. You can take her all over the DC universe. There's so much you can do with that character. Anyway. Enough about that. Battle Pug 1. Wow. I gave it 6 out of 10 because I'm being kind. The art's very good. It's a parody of sort of a parody of Conan Barbarian comics. It's not for that reason I just like it. I just found it was like, I honestly found it tough to follow, tough to care. Yeah, I'm coming in halfway through, but this wasn't new reader friendly. If you'd read all the Battle Pug before, maybe you were just digging it. But I actually thought it was a really thin and boring concept, if I could be brutally honest. So I actually thought this was really good artwork with a really, really sort of overly simplistic and not in a good way story. Like, very good art. The art's excellent, actually. And it got me to the end. I almost didn't make it to the end of this comic, which is the second comic this week. Like, Neil Adams' Batman, I struggled through. This wasn't as bad as that, which is why I'm giving it a 6. because I think the art is fantastic in this book, but the writing is, it's like a really small joke stretched out over 30 pages, and it's not interesting at all. And people are like, Battlepug's back. They were so excited, which is why I did on the show. Mike Norden seems like a really cool guy. This just was aggressively not for me, basically. And if you love it, and I know there are people out there who love it, it was like a webcomic that then became like a thing. So it must have diehard supporters out there. I say God bless you. Like, good for you. Like, this is your thing. It's just not my thing. Then we turn to the last weekly comic, and this is from last week. Ray actually recommended this. Dr. Mirage 1. Wow. Dreamlike and bewitching. 8.5 out of 10. I'm going to keep reading this title. I've never read an issue of Dr. Mirage before. Again, coming in halfway through, there was a previous series, but I picked this up instantly. And she sees dead people, but now she can't see dead people. A girl comes to her door, says they're both dead and they're in hell. Like, it just really flowed. It was really good. Like, you were aware there'd been a previous comic, but in no way did you need to read it to understand it, whereas with Battlepug, I felt like not having read, you know, the previous however many issues, I had no emotional state, whereas this, I leapt in. I was fine. It didn't matter that I hadn't read the previous series because it was really well explained in, like, one or two panels. And I thought this was brilliant, actually. I thought this was brilliant. And I'm giving it 8.5 out of 10, which I believe, I like to look back, that's my highest mark this week. It's even bigger than Deceased, A Good Day to Die. You know, for reasons of my own, like, I'm not going to, we've gone through the fucking review. I'm not going to review my reviews now. Like, let me review my review of this. Like, where does that end? It ends badly. It ends with a fucking pistol on the table and you're staring into a mirror and you're wondering what's real. That's where that ends. And that's not a good place to be. Anyway, check it out. It's Valiant Comics, Dr. Mirage, 8.5 out of 10. Great art, great storytelling, extremely engaging. I will be picking up issue 2. Now, we come to Trade of the Week. Moon Knight by Houston and Finch. Charlie Houston, a novelist, I believe. He's a pulp novelist. He's described that on Wikipedia. David Finch. We know him from things like Forever Evil, an extremely gifted artist with a tendency to draw sort of dark, violent depictions of, you know, hyper, sort of aggressive superheroes. Is what I know him from anyway. Like, I mean, maybe he draws dogs playing in meadows when I'm not watching, but that's what I know him from. Wow. I wanted to do the full 13 issues here, and everyone since the Moon Knight TV show got announced has been raving about this, The Bottom, which was the first trade, and Moon Knight's violent tendencies in this trade. Now, I have a lot of personal nostalgia for this comic, especially the first trade, because I was picking it up when I first came back to comics. I came back hard, and I came back and I was buying Spider-Man, Punisher, amongst many others, and I picked up Moon Knight 1, by Charlie Houston, must have launched very close to me coming back, like within the first 6 months, and I picked it up, all the singles, well into I don't think I quite got the full run, but I got very close to it. Really, really interesting and entertaining stuff, and I think a real advertisement for the Moon Knight character. It's very violent in the sense of, like, you're watching, it's depicting Moon Knight as a very damaged individual, physically damaged through his past. He's basically like a fighter past his prime. He's got really bad knees. He's ruined his life, his relationships. He's at rock bottom. Marlene's long since left him. Frenchie's left him. Frenchie doesn't have any legs. He's got, like, little sort of poles for legs, like replacement legs, whatever you want to call it. One of the sort of kids that were little kids when Moon Knight was, like, palling around with them is dead in war. As I said, Marlene's left him. He's pretty close to out of money. and just everything is just bad. He's pumping pills down. He's not doing his physical therapy. He believes that Khonshu has deserted him. And it's just a very bleak depiction of a character. And it's so bleak that it's quite challenging. And that challenge continues through all 13 issues. Mark Spector is never treated as just a whiter-than-white hero. The art is extremely violent and vivid. He fights Bushman early on and tears off his face, which... you know, he does do and he's cool, but it's not, by no means is this, you could film this and not include that scene if you wanted to avoid narrating and still capture the power of the material. The material is very strong. The bottom, which is the first arc, is probably stronger than the second book, which continues the run, which features the Midnight character or Midnight Sun character. And part of the reason... But there's some interesting stuff because this was during the period of Civil War and both Captain America and Tony Stark both come to check out Moon Knight. And I was really impressed by what Charlie Houston did in those issues. What could have been really kind of like lame team-ups, he actually does a sort of very literary take on them. So I think what we're seeing here is a guy who's kind of fresh to comics, coming in with his own approach and playing nicely with the events at the time. I thought actually the scene with Captain America when Captain America comes to see Moon Knight is one of the strongest issues in the second trade. And then we also had the issue where he's profiled. So he goes in to meet this guy who's going to psychologically evaluate him, and he just hates Moon Knight. Like, before he gives him the card, he's basically saying, in no way will Moon Knight get through. But Moon Knight turns the tables on him and actually gets an Avengers card, or not Avengers card, like a registration card. And there's a character in here which I want to draw attention to. He's kind of a villain, but then he stands up working for Moon Knight. He's called the Profile. And he basically can read the mannerisms of every character. So any person, through their body language, their speech patterns, the way they hold themselves, etc., he can actually know what they're going to do. And it's actually really pretty damn interesting. Like, it's a real neat insight into... It's just a neat concept, basically, I thought. Like, it's just a really... sort of novel concept to have that character. And that character, after at first he's the villain, he then sort of works for Moon Knight and kind of can give him a read on people. So I thought it was interesting anyway. Like, I mean, I think that could be done in a show. I think you could definitely have him as one of the, you know, supporting characters and have a villain take on him because he's just essentially a very immoral character. But something I want to talk about really here is the character of Moon Knight Mark Spector. Guys like Raid Into the Night know him like the back of his hand. I know Moon Knight through reading the bulk of the Munch Sienkiewicz run, quite a bit of the Chuck Dixon run, and this. So my and also Warren Ellis. It's interesting because I don't think that there's a consistency to his depiction as a person. And part of that is because I think there's a lack of agreement with how to address his multiple personalities. We know how Munch and Sienkiewicz seemed to do it, which was almost like shifting gears and quite fluid. Then we had Chuck Dixon didn't seem to have the issues. We had Warren Ellis do him as a far more unbalanced, you know, sort of individual. And then we had this depiction where he's really... I thought this was a really raw depiction. And it's probably... It's my favourite, but I think it locks you into a certain pattern of storytelling, which Charlie Houston did very well. And it was a shame when David Finch departed the artwork because it had a real consistency of tone. Like, the way Khonshu was depicted by Bushman with his face taken off, I thought was really cool. And he was kind of like a walking, talking personification of Moon Knight's madness. I'm always confused by how powerful or not Moon Knight is. Like, how real or not are his viewings of Khonshu and stuff like that? Like, I don't know. I just... And I don't think the material over time has helped because there's not a consistency to the way Marvel approaches it. I've read some appalling Moon Knight runs. I thought Bendis was appalling. I actually dropped it when Bendis came on. I just remember thinking his Moon Knight sucked. But Warren Ellis's Moon Knight, which was almost an experiment in form, is extremely interesting. I've not read Jeff Lemire's Moon Knight. I've read a couple of issues and thought it was also very interesting. What I seem to have gathered is that, in general, Khonshu is a real entity, and that's impacted on Mark's basic insanity. So I think that kind of stuff is... Combine that with action. As long as you don't drop the action completely, I think you've got a really compelling show. There's no way they'll, you know, ignore it, because I think it's going to be a big part of the character. But I think exploring at what level Khonshu is a real entity that impacts on his life, as opposed to a made-up alter ego kind of thing, is going to be one of the parts that makes it the show, you know, either sink or swim. The violence in this is very much part of it. Moon Knight is extremely damaged physically, emotionally, and mentally, and he likes getting hit. He's like a boxer who likes getting hit. He doles out punishment that's extreme. I'm not even going to bother to get really into it. People say he's Marvel's Batman. I think he's far more psychotic. Obviously psychotic, I should say. Because definitely you can do a psychotic Batman. But he's more obviously psychotic than Batman. And I don't think, you know, I don't think that, like, it's as simple as saying he's Marvel's Batman. Because I think Moon Knight has his own bag of tricks, frankly. And I think that those analyses are simplistic and, you know, don't carry a lot of weight. Reading this reinvigorated me to check out Moon Knight again. I've always enjoyed him. And because of Ray, I often do think of Into the Night and how I appreciate just the level of dedication that it takes to have a podcast based on one character. I think that's pretty cool. At Signal, we're a very broad church. Of course, I dial us in for Conan, Punisher, and Judge Dredd and stuff like that, but there's a certain purity to doing a show based on one character, and I think Into the Night do a fantastic job, frankly, and have reinvigorated my interest in Moon Knight. It's kind of reminded me that Moon Knight's there. It made me think of Marvel Ultimate Alliance. When I bought this comic, that game came out and you could play as Moon Knight. It was pretty cool. You could have a Marvel Knights team, actually. It was like Daredevil, I forget who else, Moon Knight. I'm not sure if Ghost Rider was in Marvel Alliance 1, but Daredevil was, and so was Moon Knight. And, I just thought it was... I just think it's more than a cool read. Charlie Houston experiments with form in this. Even after the departure of David Fincher, some really interesting approaches to doing a comic book that lifted up from just another monthly comic, you know, those comics that we've all done them, we've all read them, those comics where you just read it and forget it in the second. This I savored, like, Marlene, one of my favorite characters, is very disengaged from Moon Knight here. Moon Knight's kind of pretty much stalking him. Moon Knight's kind of a creep in this comic book. He's not a character to aspire to be. He's a character who is hitting bottom. And he doesn't really clamber his whole way out. It's actually very dark, murky storytelling. It made me think that Charlie Houston had a lot to give here. I was kind of interested why he left, because maybe it was sales, because it seemed like he was really hitting it out of the park. Like, even his last issue is very, very good. The absence of David Finch was felt when he leaves the title, because he had such a unique way of approaching Moon Knight. Moon Knight appears like a sort of, almost like a monster in his own comic. He's so violent, close to unhinged. All his support team are bickering with him, like Frenchie doesn't want to know him. Oh, no, doesn't want to know him, doesn't want to support him like he used to. Frenchie's partner is his Moon Knight's physical therapist. This was the issue where it came out that Frenchie was gay. I don't know if that was ever hinted at before, but it's certainly part of this comic book. there's a lot of interesting stuff here. I appreciated some of the experiments with form that were being taken. And, I mean, I'd give it 9 out of 10. I think it's an extremely good run. I think it stood the test of time. People always... Moon Knight fans always rave about this run. And I wanted to go back and read it in full and experience it. And let me tell you, I've been reading it this whole week. It enthralled me. I remembered certain issues early on, but I didn't remember a lot of it. I think it handled well stuff like Punisher being in there, Captain America, Iron Man. We're all given different little takes and little vignettes of their relationships with Moon Knight. Made you realize Moon Knight's been around a long time. He's been a West Coast Avenger. You know, he's always been a bit of a loose cannon. I think that makes him interesting. He's far more out there than Batman is in terms of his mental state. Yeah, you can do a Batman that's more psychotic. I mean, yeah, like Frank Miller experimented with that. But, you know, a lot of the time, Batman's not psychotic at all. Like, he's kind of cold, if anything, and controlled. Whereas Moon Knight here is close to, well, I mean, he just, by the start of it, he's like confined to a wheelchair and sort of sitting there drinking alone kind of thing. Like, he's dark and in a depressive way. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was really fucking cool. Like, we've done Moon Knight before on the Signal. I'd recommend listeners, one of our first shows we did the big epic collection that covers the start of the Munch and Sienkiewicz run or the middle half of it. And I've also got the epic collection that covers the end of it, which I will do as well, the Signal at some point, probably when Stu comes back. Yeah, so I mean, we dig it. I dig the Chuck Dixon Moon Knight as well. Moon Knight's a cool character, and I think Charlie Houston did a good job with him, a very good job with him. I mean, 9 out of 10. It's one of the highest scores I've given on the Signal. I think that this resonates. I think it has emotional depth. I think it plays with concepts of, like creepiness factor, obsession, and it doesn't give sort of like I hate pun, but like whitewash the hero. It doesn't validate all of Moon Knight's behavior. It doesn't excuse it, is what I'm trying to say. You're not pitched a perfect hero. You're pitched a very flawed character that even when he improves and goes back to basically working out his demons on the street, is still a very flawed character. There's a darkness over the whole run that permeates into the characters and, you know, is very apparent as a reader. You know, I think that's pretty much all I want to say on the topic. I don't want to spin my wheels any longer. I definitely recommend, if you're a Marvel fan, if you're a street level fan, check it out. If you like Punisher, look, check it out. It's a good place to start. I'd recommend, for Moon Knight, from my personal reading, I'd recommend, the Munch Sienkiewicz stuff. I'd recommend this, and I'd recommend Warren Ellis. It's like did a six-issue run or something. So the Munch Sienkiewicz is essential. If you want to experiment a bit further, Chuck Dixon is fantastic. His Moon Knight run, it's a crime it's not collected. It should be put into an epic collection. It's extremely enjoyable comic books. But it's a million miles from this. So it's interesting. What I find with Moon Knight is there's a lot of different ways to do the character. So this is very different from the Warren Ellis take. And I think it's a million times darker than what I've read of Munch Sienkiewicz. Maybe they get even darker towards the end of their run, but, you know, it's a different flavor. And I think Charlie Houston did a fantastic job, and reading this makes me want to go and check out some of his other writing. Now, okay, we're coming towards the end of the show. Thank you for listening to a solo show from me. I hope it hasn't been too boring. It feels very much like Elvis, 70s, you know, Elvis on tour 72. Whole lot of loving going on. Obviously, there's the collective. You know them. Into the Night. We Are Venomaniacs. I Am Your Target Demographic. Inner Demons. Last Sons of Krypton. EMP. The list goes on. Signal of Doom. We're all there. We're all blazing. We cooperate with each other. We form alliances. We go to war. It's a war on crime. Imagine that. Illegal downloaders. And he, like, Ghost Rider stares into the screen. And Dave felt a pang of guilt. Yeah. Illegal downloaders. I loved it so much. Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. Yeah. Look, there's the collective. There's the Facebook page, Signal of Doom. One of my goals is to get that over 2,000 people. following. I think right now we're on about 1,720 or something like that, around that figure. And yeah, I mean, I there's people out there I know haven't. Look, I know it can be a drag. Like, look, you know, I dig it. I'm on Facebook a lot though, but you know, promoting the show and stuff like that, and doing memes, my two favorite things in life to do. But I dig it. If you're not on Facebook, it's not a big deal, guys. Like, you know, like, don't feel like, you know, if you're on Facebook, please like Signal of Doom. I'd really appreciate if you could do iTunes reviews. They help out the cause for the show. You know, it brings more eyeballs to the show. We're talking to some potential people to sponsor us and stuff like that. You know, I don't want to bore you with the ins and outs of all that kind of stuff. But, like, I would appreciate any iTunes reviews you can do. That is very much appreciated. Obviously, with my latest book, Des Moines Soulfighter, is out there. If you want to pick a copy of that up, it's available on Amazon, Kindle, and paperback. Stu's out there in the wilderness, man. He's fighting his own war. Imagine that. And you know, we've just got to let him go. He'll come back. He's out there in the jungles right now, but he'll come back. I know Stu. So we're looking forward to that. Next week, Grimjack, Omnibus, Volume 1. Big. Readers, look, if you've ever liked Grimjack at all or you want to experience it, check it out and write into the show. Give me your thoughts. Michael Kellishim, shout out, brother. He sends me some emails, and I always mean to write back, like, a really long, like, full-on email to Michael Kellishim, because he writes me stuff that makes me just, like, he just gets what we're doing with the Signal. And so many of you guys do, guys and girls out there as well. Shout out to Natasha. I love her so much. And you know, people who bother to write in, and I handle all the social media, and we're always operating at, like, fast pace. And I do respond, but sometimes I wish I would respond with a longer message, because I feel like these people take the time to write and stuff. So I love all that interaction. It's one of the things that makes the Signal fun. As you can tell tonight, I've had about 10,000 cups of coffee today. I'm exhausted, but it's always a pleasure to do the Signal. And you know, I just feel like we could run on forever. Like, if no scandals broke this week, there was really no scandals to speak of. But yeah, we got through some good news. We have a treat this week too. We've got a friend of a friend. Ray introduced me to this guy, Noel, I believe is his name, and he has a band called Deleter. And I mean, what a cool name for a band, Deleter. And he's done a series of songs all based around basically the Moon Knight run, the Warren Ellis Moon Knight run, which I love. So 6 issues, I believe, was the run, and Noel has done a fair number of sounds and songs around different comic books and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. And this is a real trip. So I think in honor of us doing Moon Knight this week, let's relax, kick back, enjoy Deleter, and I believe the song's called The Other Void.
Drop it.
Okay. On that note, I want to wish you all good night. Take care out there. Stay fluid. Keep moving. Keep killing if you have to. Most importantly, keep it together. And I'll see you next week. Goodbye.